hickory and I am, but this thing's going on, make me mad down to the core. I have to work like a dog to make ends meet. There's crooked politicians and crime in the street, and I'm madder than hell, and I ain't gonna take it no more. Tell our kids to just say no, and then some panty waist judge lets a drug dealer go. He slaps him on the wrist and he turns it back out on the town. But if I had my way with people selling dope, I'd take a big tall tree and a short piece of rope. I'd hang them up behind a little swing till the sun goes down. Hey, you know what? Not the law of the land. Well, the good book says it, so I know it's the truth. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. You better watch where you go and remember where you've been. That's the way I see it. I'm a simple man. Now, I'm the kind of man who'd not harm a mouse, but if I catch somebody breaking in my house, I got a 12-gauge shotgun waiting on the other side. So don't go pushing me against my will. I don't want to have to fight you, but a darn sure will. If you don't want trouble, then you better just pass me on. As far as I'm concerned, there ain't no excuse. The raping and the killing and the child abuse. I got a way to put an end to all that mess. You just take them rattles out in the swamp. I'll put them on the knees and tie them to a stump. Let the rattlers and the bugs and the alligators do the rest. Well, you know what's wrong with the world today. People not gonna put their Bibles away. They're living by the law of the jungle. Well, the good book says it, so I know it's true. I'm for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. You better watch where you go and remember where you've been. That's the way I see it. I'm a simple man. Watch where you go and remember where you've been.
My friends, difficult to make sense of so much that is happening in our country today. Values, morals, civility, personal responsibility. We're living in a world where right is wrong and wrong is right. Morals are immoral and immoral is moral. Good is evil. Evil is good. Good evening. Welcome to The Edge of Darkness. I'm your host for the next hour, Jeffrey Bennett. You're listening to us live on RBN tonight on this second day of November. Well, Americans have been busy scooting their kitties off to school, hustling to work, maybe enjoying dinner with family and friends, and then getting their kitties tucked up for the night. The masterminds of a subtly building mindset have been taking over our culture, using a convincing belief system that is incompatible with what it means to be a free citizen of this republic. Now, this repackaging ideology is something they now call woke. Now, I realize this term carries much with it, so I want to share with you Merriam-Webster's definition, which is to be, quote, aware of and actively attentive to important societal facts and issues, end quote. Personally, I believe it's of utmost importance to be aware of what is happening in society when it comes to issues of racism, hate, inequality, and injustice, and anything that is harmful to humanity and community and our future generations. By definition, But this ideology has been hijacked, somehow become the founders and the CEO of wokeism, abusing what the term itself means. And furthermore, with the fuel of guilt and peer pressure, it bulldozes over anyone in its path, leaving no room for common sense to stop it or to hold it for questions. And when someone tries to, they're given a label that society quickly believes is true and considered canceled. I believe this underlying ideology, my friends, is far too much like and rooted in something called Marxism, which, when institutionalized and fully implemented, will deny the current and future way of life that our country has been founded upon, dwindling the very liberties we hold near to our hearts. And yes, our country, every country, every human has gotten it wrong, very wrong. But that does not mean that we need to burn down everything and everyone who has gone before us. See, the ugly uprising of forced lockdowns, protests, all manner of civil disobedience resulted in $2 billion worth of property damage, 700 injured law enforcement officers, many deaths, and what appears to be the first wave of unbridled realignment of power at every level. The question became, who will prevail? What will be the consequences? In the world that most people live in, we are created beings, not the creators of life itself. Children are important. The weak need protecting, and we all are tasked with making wise and personally responsible decisions for our lives, keeping in regard for the lives around us, those that want to upend the world. It's one thing to erase the stigma of single parenthood or biracialism or different sexual orientations. It is another to portray such changes as representative of our entire society. If we listen to the loud and dominant voice of this ideology, then things like traditional marriage and family and the freedom to create and work and make money, which, by the way, has funded most organizations doing good in the world. What about a faith in God? Many of these things seem old-fashioned, likely corrupt, probably harmful. So beware. And so we lean in. We hesitantly believe. We look for signs. We see a few, and maybe we buy into the BS. And we've not yet seen where it will lead us to. In a dramatic way, my friends, it reminds me of another mindset that abused power and lied to innocent people, loading them up willingly by the droves to their own slaughter camps. Well, doesn't seem right. The well-being of a few should take precedence over the well-being of many. The downward spiral of America is gaining momentum, and our freedoms are being stolen each and every day. Our children are being exploited. Our civilization is imploding. Our cities are sinking into third world crime havens. I posted a piece on Sierra Madre last night. The Venezuelan hookers that are taking over the streets of New York City. That's right. Third world crime havens. Our borders are like torn sieves. And most importantly, the sovereignty of the God who created us is being replaced by a belief that we are all our own gods. And that is never and never end well for any individual or an entire generation of humanity, my friends. The attack on our culture and freedoms inspired us to learn more about these radical groups attacking our way of life. In that educational journey, one realizes they can no longer be silent. And therefore, Ron Wallace the author of what I'm just sharing with you, is no longer saying sooner or later. Because later is now sooner. I met Ron recently, not physically. He came across an article that we had published several years ago, and it blew his mind. He left a comment on Federal Observer when he came across this article, and he's been in touch with me. What I've just shared with you is from a new book that he's writing. And as time goes on, we'll share more with you about it, where and how we can get a hold of some of them, because I think it's important. And the man's got quite an interesting history unto himself. He's no young spring chicken. So we sit there looking and talking about some of these issues, and we realize that this global explosion of hate is yet another sign that we really are living, my friends, in the end times. You have a difficult time following that? Understanding it? I will share with you that this is going to be a very unusual hour tonight. You'll understand when we get to the end. What we are witnessing is truly frightening. In my entire lifetime, I've never seen as much hate as I have over these past few weeks, few months. Almost as if a very large chunk of the global population has suddenly gone absolutely mad. But of course, all this hate did not come out of a vacuum. It's been simmering for many years, and now the war in the Middle East has brought it to the surface. Simple terms, humans were created to love and to be loved. And so if you find yourself consumed with hatred, then you become a part of the problem. Of course, we knew that this global explosion of hate would be coming. The Bible warned us repeatedly about what the condition of humanity will be like in the end times. One simple example of this can be found in Matthew chapter 24, verse 8. All these are the beginning of sorrows. 9. And then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. 10. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. When Jesus spoke these words, he was speaking to Jewish believers. Now, right now, we're seeing a tremendous outpouring of hatred toward Jews and Bible-believing Christians all over this planet. October the 7th was not a one-time thing, my friends. Ultimately, radical Muslims will never be satisfied until they have annihilated every single person that is not willing to submit to Islam. And even though their focus is on wiping out Jewish people living in the land of Israel right now, it will definitely not end there. And so the things that Hamas official Ghazi Hamad recently said on LBC television should chill all of us to the core. He said that Hamas is prepared to repeat the October 7th Al-Aqsa flood operation time and again until Israel is annihilated. He added that Palestinians are willing to pay the price and that they are proud to sacrifice martyrs. Hamad said that Palestinians are the victims of the occupation, therefore no one should blame them for the events of October the 7th or anything else. And he closed by saying, everything we do is justified. This is from a man that has been totally consumed by hatred. And there are millions upon millions of others just like him all over the world. And we've got somewhere between 7,000 and 9,000 of them that are heading toward our borders right now as I speak on this program tonight. Since October the 7th, we've seen an explosion of anti-Jewish acts that is truly unprecedented. In Los Angeles, a man screaming, "Kill the Jews," attempts to break into a family's home. In London, girls in a playground are told that they are stinking Jews and should stay off the slide. In China, posts likening Jews to parasites and vampires or snakes proliferate on social media, attracting thousands of likes. These are examples of incidents of anti-Semitism, which have surged globally since the attack by Hamas gunmen on southern Israel on October the 7th, and the subsequent war on the Islamist group launched by Israel in the Gaza Strip. Oh, and Joey Biden's Congress today has approved sending $14 billion to Israel. Maybe it's million, maybe it's billion. We seem to be the international banker this country has become. We're funding massive amounts of money into Ukraine. Now it's Israel. Just keep the wars going on. The magic number seems to be 14, no matter what we send out. But one must consider that thanks to very foolish immigration policies, major cities all over the Western world are now absolutely teeming with radical Muslims, and that includes right here in this country. And we've been warned for a long time that this would cause massive problems. Like it or not, Jewish communities everywhere are living in fear. In France, large numbers of homes and businesses that are owned by Jewish people are being marked with paint. France has documented 819 latent anti-Semitic attacks since the war between Hamas and Israel began on October the 7th. That according to the Minister of Interior, Gerald Darmanin. In Jewish homes on the outskirts of Paris, multiple blue stars of David have been painted on homes and stone fences. Swastikas have been sprayed next to Jewish institutions. Students have been publicly harassed outside of Jewish schools. And sadly, my friends, this is not just happening in France. Similar things are taking place in Germany. I've shared with you in the past one of my absolute best friends since the age of 12, Jeffrey Gusfield. His father, David. His mother, whose name escapes me right now. I spent so much time with them, Jewish. I wasn't concerned. They were human beings. And the relationship that we developed was quite astounding. Germany. Recent weeks have seen Germany's Chancellor Olaf Scholz vow to take a zero-tolerance approach to anti-Semitism, citing the responsibility towards Israel, given Germany's role as the perpetrator of the Holocaust, in which 6 million Jews were allegedly murdered. Other national leaders have echoed these same concerns. In recent days, Scholz has doubled down on the pledge after assailants hurled two Molotov cocktails at a synagogue in central Berlin, and the Star of David was found daubed in the facades of several buildings where Jews live in Berlin. My friends, there is no rational way to explain the intensity of this kind of hatred. That's because it's spiritually inspired. If you find yourself hating Jews or Christians, it's probably because you have opened up a door to a very dark spiritual force. And unfortunately, what we have witnessed so far is just the beginning. For as the war in the Middle East really ramps up, I believe we're going to see some truly dramatic terror attacks all over the world. Last Tuesday, FBI Director Christopher Wray warned members of Congress that the threat of terrorism inside the United States has reached a whole other level. He stated terrorist threats against the U.S. reached a whole other level after the Hamas attack on Israel. And he stated that the big players in terrorism have all renewed calls to attack America and its interests. And he said the level of threats have heightened since Biden took office. so U.S. law enforcement is better prepared to deal with them. The reality is, he continued, that terrorism threat has been elevated throughout 2023, but the ongoing war in the Middle East has raised the threat of attack on Americans to a whole other level. From this point forward, things are going to start getting really crazy. We really are living in the end times. But that's not bad news. God warned us about all of these things in advance. He has a plan. He is in control. So even though darkness is rapidly growing all over the world, we should never give in to fear. Copy. Michael Snyder of The Economic Collapse. How do you feel when you begin to think of things like this? How do you begin to feel watching the insanity going on in Congress and the fighting and the arguments and the disagreements? No, I'm not happy about $14 million or $14 billion that's been committed to Israel. We send so damn much money to Israel every year. It sucks. And they send an awful lot of that money back, making sure that they buy our elected officials to ensure that they'll get more money next year. The insanity that we see going on in Iran, what we've witnessed in our lives in Iraq, and now this absolute hatred that's taking place. We've got military people being sent all over, except they're not traditional military. They're, what do we call them? Not militias. I can't think. I apologize. They're kind of like volunteers that get together once a month, do their thing. It's just appalling to me. We're sending people like this over. And to go back to our previous commentary from Mr. Wallace, I look at the terminology of woke. I think about what's taking place within the military. I can't call it mixed sex situation. You know, cut off his sting with a carving knife, three blind mice, et cetera, et cetera. These kind of things become unbelievably appalling to me. You have heard me state that, to the point of probably being tired of hearing me say it, I was at greater peace 21 months in Vietnam than I am in this country today. And a lot of it is our political idiocy. There's a move to have one guy booted out of Congress, and a bunch of other weak sucks caved in and said, oh, no, no. What this guy has done is unbelievable. There's so much more insanity going on. Look at that. We had kids stabbed at a high school today in California. Why? What was it for? Were some of these kids Jewish? I'm just asking a question. I'm not sticking into that whole thing. By the way, 21,000 Chinese migrants have crossed our border. Not all today. Been going on. We're allowing the enemy to come into this country. We've got so many people that under normal circumstances never would be allowed to come in here. We're inviting the enemy. How many members of the enemy might even belong to our military? What's their ultimate goal? Their purpose? It's appalling. Absolutely appalling. Do we not have enough politicians that are using their freaking head? Or is it more important to fill your pocketbook? You think the stories we're hearing about Joey and his son and all the money that they've apparently sucked in, you think that that's an unusual thing? It's not. We'll move on to something else. I shared with you earlier, this is going to be a little bit of an unusual program tonight. Some 43 years after the death of John Lennon, more than two decades on from George Harrison's passing, the Beatles have come together once again with the help of Al, or is it AI, an audio tech pioneered by the Lord of the Rings and Get Back director Sir Peter Jackson. This became a very unusual story that I began to follow some days ago. There's a brand new song called Now and Then. It was written and sung by John Lennon in 1977. And it featured acoustic and electric guitar played by George Harrison in 1995. Well, now Sir Paul McCartney completed the bass and Ringo Starr recorded the drums in the last year. McCartney said, describing how special it was to work with Lennon again, he says, when we were in the studio, we had John's voice in our ears. You could imagine he was just in the next room in a vocal booth or something, and we were just working with him again, so it was joyful. It was really lovely, you know, because we hadn't experienced that for a long time, obviously, and then suddenly here we were working with old Johnny. Yesterday afternoon at 2 o'clock, Great Britain time, Now and Then was released to the public. And for those who were invited to come listen, it was unbelievable. Five decades it took to bring this phenomenal product of conversations and collaborations between the four Beatles that in many respects still go on to this day. They were not one of my favorite groups. But then I was into jazz even then and blues. But the long mythologized John Lennon demo was first worked in February of 1995 by Paul, George, and Ringo as part of something called the Beatles Anthology Project, but it remained unfinished, partly because of the impossible technological challenges involved working with the vocal John had recorded on tape in the 1970s. But for years, it looked like the song could never be completed, but in 2022, there was a stroke of serendipity. A software system developed by Peter Jackson and his team used throughout the production of the documentary series Get Back finally opened the way for the uncoupling of John's vocal from his piano part. And as a result, the original recording could be brought to life and worked on anew with contributions from all four Beatles. Well, I'm not going to share any more of the story, but we're going to do something unusual today. We now have the completion of this last recording that John, Paul, George, and Ringo will ever get to make together, and it celebrates the legacy of the foremost and most influential band in popular music history. Welcome to Now and Then. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Because
I shared with you this would be an unusual program from the standpoint of music. As many of you know, music does much for me. I listen to a wide range of music. There's times I listen to classical. There's times I listen to old Sinatra or Ella Fitzgerald or Johnny Mathis, who's still out performing, by the way, since the middle to late 1950s. There are times that I will share with you a couple of quotes that are published on Federal Observer. And I'm going to share both of them with you again right now. Because I think that each of them has a profound meaning given some of the content of the program that we did the first half hour tonight. The phrase, "the fall of America," suggests some cataclysmic event ended the American empire, which had stretched from Maine to California and Florida to Washington. But at the end, there was no straining at the gates, no barbarian horde that dispatched the empire in one fell swoop. Rather, our empire fell slowly as a result of challenges from within and without, and changing over the course of hundreds of years until its form was unrecognizable. And then the question asked by a young girl of her father, "Dad, why do people give up freedom for security?" And her father answers, "It's called the Hegelian dialect, sweetie. They create a problem. The problem creates a reaction. And if there's enough fear and hysteria, people will not only accept the solution that limits their rights, but they will actually beg for it." My closing comment to that was from a song, "Don't They Know It's the End of the World?" These are the things that must be considered. These are the things that Who was I having a conversation with the other day? And the conversation led to discussion of spirituality and prayer. I've made no bones about it. I stopped going to church years ago because I began to see the direction that most churches in this country were going. And when my wife and I joined some friends of ours at a Christmas Eve gathering at the church that they went to. And these are very devout Christians. But there's some things that I don't believe they see. And in this church was a rock band. And the guy in the drum was behind glass so they could kind of cut down the drumming business. And it's like they're more concerned with trying to attract the young people into the church, which is fine. But I don't believe in doing it by converting to rock music. That's a personal choice, but it's not mine. I look at the teachings I had from Reverend Harry Lundell when I was a young kid, through high school, and when I went into the military. And Dr. Lundell, when he was getting ready to retire from the church that I'd attended for so many years, and I was a member of the choir, and I was in the Boy Scouts, and that happens to be the church that we also met at. And we had pancake festivals every year. Aunt Jemima was there. And Reverend Lundell, he was given a gift by the parish for retirement, that he could travel to Europe, travel to Bible country, as it were. And he was coming through our town, 20 minutes, half hour away from where I was stationed. And they made arrangements for him to meet with me. And he did. And I've never forgotten that. That's the difference in a church from today and yesterday. We're reading more and more about people who are abandoning their churches because they don't believe in the direction those churches are going any longer. Let me share a story with you. During the waning years of the Depression in a small southeastern Idaho community, our author used to stop by Mr. Miller's roadside stand for farm fresh produce as the season made it available. Food and money were still extremely scarce, and barter was used extensively. On one particular day, as Mr. Miller was bagging some early potatoes for me, I noticed a small boy, delicate of bone and feature, ragged but clean, hungrily appraising a basket of freshly picked green peas. Now, our author said he was a pushover for green peas and new potatoes. And pondering the peas, I couldn't help overhearing the conversation between Mr. Miller and the ragged boy next to me. "Hello, Barry. How are you today?" "Oh, Mr. Miller. Fine, thank you. Just admiring them peas. They sure look good." "They are good, Barry. How's your ma?" "She's fine. She's getting stronger all the time." "Well, it's good. Is there anything I can help you with?" "No, sir. Just admiring them peas." "Would you like to take some home?" asked Mr. Miller. "No, sir. I've got nothing to pay for them with." "Well, what have you got to trade me for some of those peas?" "All I got's my prize marble here." "Is that right? Let me see it," said Mr. Miller. "Here it is. She's a dandy." "Oh, I can see that. Only thing is this one's blue and I sort of go for red. You have a red one like this at home?" Mr. Miller asked. "Not exactly, but almost. Tell you what, you take the sack of peas home with you, and next trip this way, you let me look at that red marble." "Sure will. Thanks, Mr. Miller." Well, Mrs. Miller, who was standing nearby, came over to help our author. With a sly smile, she said, "There's two other boys just like him in our community. And all three are in very poor circumstances. Now, Jim just loves to bargain with them for peas and apples and tomatoes or whatever. And when they come back with their red marbles, they always do. He decides he doesn't like red after all. And he sends them home with a bag of produce for a green marble. Or orange, perhaps. I left the stand, smiling to myself, impressed with this man. Well, a short time later, I moved to Utah, but never forgot the story of this man and the boys and their bartering. Now, several years went by, each more rapid than the previous one. Just recently, I had an occasion to visit some old friends in that Idaho community, and while there, learned that Mr. Miller had died. They were having his viewing that evening. Knowing my friends wanted to go, I agreed to accompany them. Upon our arrival at the mortuary, we fell into line to meet the relatives of the deceased and to offer whatever words of comfort we could. Well, ahead of us in the line were three fine-looking young men. One was in an army uniform. The other two wore short haircuts, dark suits, white shirts. They approached Mrs. Miller, standing, smiling, and composed by her husband's casket. Each of the young men hugged her, kissed her on the cheek, spoke briefly to her, and moved on to the casket. And her misty, light blue eyes followed them as one by one each young man stopped briefly, placed his own warm hand over the cold, pale hand in the casket, and left the mortuary, awkwardly wiping his eyes. Well, as our turn came to meet Mrs. Miller, I told her who I was, mentioned the story she'd told me about the marbles. Eyes glistening, she took my hand and led me to the casket. "This is an amazing coincidence," she said. "Those three boys that just left are the three boys I told you about. They just told me how they appreciated the things Jim's traded them. And now at last, when Jim could not change his mind about color or size, they came to pay their debt. They've never had a great deal of the wealth of this world," she confided, "but right now Jim would consider himself the richest man in Idaho." With loving gentleness, she lifted the lifeless fingers of her deceased husband. And resting underneath were three magnificent, shiny red marbles. Author W. E. Peterson. This article was published originally as Three Marbles in the October 1975 Ensign magazine, which is no longer in publication. I did some study and some looking around. I think I found out that they stopped printing in 2020, just a few years ago. Well, it's an interesting story, it is. It's a story that was sent to me, strangely enough, in 2020. The year that Ensign Magazine ceased publication. And this was sent to me by my good friend Granny, Jackie Chutty. But she added a moral to this story. Reading this moral again, now keep in mind, I published this on Federal Observer back in 2020 when Jackie first sent it to me. July the 6th, by the way, of 2020. Many times, I frankly rarely read everything I publish. I don't have time. But coming from Jackie, I had no doubt that it was the right thing to do. And yet, I sit there today as I share this with you. And I begin to look at and read the moral that Jackie sent me about the story I've just shared. We will not be remembered by our words, but by our kind deeds. Life is not measured by the breaths we take, but by the moments that take our breath. Today, I wish you a day of ordinary miracles. A fresh pot of coffee you didn't make yourself. An unexpected phone call from an old friend. Maybe green stoplights on your way to work. Or the fastest line at the grocery store. Or a good sing-along song on the radio. Or your keys found right where you left them. And as Granny closed, she says, "Send this to the people you'll never forget." I just did. Now, as I mentioned, what I've just shared with you was originally published on Federal Observer July the 6th, 2020. But it's because a new reader, author Ron Wallace, found it on the site. How? I don't know. It blew him away, and he left a comment on the article. And his comment was, "I just finished a book on American history and courage." He said, "I cried when I read the story in such a powerful ending." He has now requested permission to use this and add it to the book. Now, who's Ronald Wallace? Ronald Wallace is the author, the writer of the piece we opened this program with tonight, "Woke or Awake." He and I have not spoken on the phone yet, but we're scheduled to do so. His new book will be hopefully publishing soon, entitled "Crying Out for America: My comment was, in the meantime, I felt that the time was right to repost this simply amazing piece." And of course, as for Jackie, Granny, no, she was not the author of the Three Marvels, but chose to post her personal feelings in her closing statements of the moral. Granny is in her 80s. She is still a daily reader, a frequent contributor to Kettle Marine Productions, publications. She can still be reached. I need to call her tomorrow. We've not spoken for a while. What an amazing story. Three Marbles. It is quite profound. Michael, are you with me? I hope. Hello, hello. Hope you didn't disappear on me. I kind of got ahead of myself. Got further ahead into this than I expected to. And let's go ahead and play that now. I got a piece of music I want to play now, and then I'll be back with one final piece of music to close the program.
I rolled out this morning, kids had the morning news show on. In Lebanon, some senator was squawking about the bad economy. It's gonna get worse, you see. You need a change in policy. There's a local paper rolled up in a rubber band. One more sad story's one more than I can stand.
out time. A little good news today. Anne Marie, I greatly miss her singing. Common sense, straight to the point. I want to thank you for staying with me tonight. I hope that you've learned something. I hope you've picked up some lessons. I hope that this is one of these programs that dug deep down within you. Tears, smiles, joy, laughter. In some cases, maybe a little bit of anger as well. I want to thank you all. I'll see you next week. Got a full week coming up. Couldn't find praying for time, huh? Oh, my goodness gracious. I have found that the pressure I'm under, I've been at peace with my programming this week. Hope you found some benefits there as well. Take care of yourself. Be blessed. I'll see you next week. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.
These silent days of the open hand, it will not be the last. Look around now, these are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past. And in a hand with vigilance and legitimate excuses, the rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure if we have it too much, but we're taking our chances. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing had changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no
from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.